Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome, everybody. Chuck Bonneau, Julie Hayden, the True Straight Up. I miss every time I say intro. I recognize that I used to be a lot better looking person when I was younger.
Regarding our intro, we have to shoot it. Rev is now taller than me, so it's a little while. Version of the Chuck and Julie Show, the show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Chinese Acupuncture and Advanced Chinese Medicine, along with HappyTrees.co and Denver Cenogenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Coming up at 3:30, we're going to have Robert Spencer on
Jihad Watch.
Talk
about Ukraine, the Russian war, and
To know the FBI is now standing with Ukraine.
Yes.
Justice Department. So
unfortunately, they've got some time when they're not arresting. Silent prayers in front of abortion clinics,
parents
at school board meetings.
So.
Man, there's no better, worse publicity for Ukraine than the FBI is all for them.
It's coming up at the bottom of the hour, but right now we want to introduce Eric Odlin. He's been on our show several times. A lot of you guys remember him from when he ran for Congress in the CD7. He is now also one of several candidates who've thrown their hat into the race for state GOP chair, and that vote will be by the 490 some central committee members coming up March 11th.
It's not clear how many people, because there's more people than there are votes, but
yeah.
Nonetheless, it'll be in the 400s. And we're so happy to have you with us, Eric.
Eric, thank you for your time on this Friday.
Glad to be with you.
You'd be glad to know that you and the other candidates got the best negative endorsement ever for candidates. Dick Wadham said, y'all stink.
I read that. Yeah.
I mean, the only thing worse for somebody is for somebody saying, I like Eric Odlin or I like Casper Stockholm. And if Dick says it, then that would lose him probably any chance of winning. But
let me jump in. We've been interviewing all of the candidates, and I want to let folks know we'll have Aaron Wood on Monday. But we're kind of starting out the same with everybody and just, you know, asking you to go ahead and say, you know, what you're standing for, why you're running, what you want people
give
to
us
know.
Your 1 minute synopsis.
Or it can be longer than a minute.
Well, it can't be 10 minutes. but go ahead and give us the pitch.
Well, I'll keep it brief. I think most people know my bio, but I'll just hit the highlights. Former Republican nominee for Congressional District 7. Got on the ballot through the assembly, won a contested primary, then became a nationally targeted race. West Point graduate, Army officer, did a couple tours in combat, Iraq and Afghanistan, received 2 Bronze Stars, 1 for valor. I left the Army as a captain after commanding a unit in Afghanistan, and then spent a decade in the oil and natural gas business all over the world. I've drilled oil and natural gas wells extensively here in Colorado, but finished managing a $300 billion project in Israel, built a pipeline for a $5 billion project that made him a net exporter of natural gas, and then got involved politically. And the mission I have in running for chairman is the same mission I had in running for Congress. That's to beat Democrats, these radical left socialist agenda that is destroying opportunity. I have 3 little children, 8, 1 turns 6, and the other turns 2, and I think their future is in jeopardy. So we're at a low point as a Republican Party, just suffering the worst string of defeats in our history. And I have extensive leadership experience, and I'm in this arena because I love Colorado. I don't want to be forced to leave it because of what's happening, and I'm fighting for my family. So I can pause and then.
Well, let me hit some of the contested topics. And I know your campaign is really good about sending up pretty, because I get the emails, the updates. But why don't you hit some of the things that are kind of buttons for Colorado Republicans? The primary, the open primary. There have been some proposals to get rid of the caucus system. And, you know, maybe let's have you talk about what's your position on those 2 things.
Yeah, so I published an article in Campfire Colorado making a case to close the primary and to do it legally through a lawsuit, which was voted on by the Central Committee and hasn't been perpetuated. And I think there is a lot of merits to closing the primary, and I'll support that as chairman. I've also been accused of wanting to get rid of the caucus system. I don't want to get rid of the caucus system. I want to make it excellent. I also published a newsletter, which you can find on my website, which outlines my plan to make the caucus succeed and support candidates to win elections. I think it's essential that we make it work right. And in many counties across the state, it's not functioning to full capacity. Some counties do it better than ever. So I'll partner with county leadership across the state to make the caucus system well-run, efficient, and a phenomenal exercise for the grassroots, which made me a better candidate, by the way. I went through the assembly. It was a great challenge, and it forced me to campaign to the core of our party. And I learned a significant amount, and it ultimately made me a better candidate. So I want to make the caucuses great again. What was your other?
Well, you hit the primary. What about ballot harvesting? Position on the whole election system and integrity and things.
Well, so one of my top priorities is for us to compete with Democrats on ballot harvesting. It's legal here in Colorado. We need to do it effectively. I think that there's not a level playing field because they're harvesting ballots. They're doing it openly, and we've never risen to compete. So we need to build out a statewide organization that competes on that. And that's a significant endeavor. I mean, the blueprint was a 20-year strategy. We need a similar counter strategy that is a long-term vision, and it includes ballot harvesting.
What about Charlene wants to know, one of our listeners, do you support Trump for president 2024?
I mean, as chairman, I'll be neutral in the primary, and if he's the nominee, he'll have my full support. Absolutely.
Do you hope he runs? Or, I mean, do you want to say anything ahead of time, or do you want to just say you would remain neutral for now?
Well, I think it's the role as chairman to by the bylaws to stay neutral in the primary. And I, you know, God only knows who that best candidate is, given all the different shifting sands. I mean, I think I've made a strong case why Trump was a phenomenal president, but I'm focused on those policies and why those policies work. And I think we have a problem focusing on personalities. I mean, when Trump ran in 2016, all the delegates here went for Cruz. And so, you know, but Trump became our nominee, and it was our duty to support him in that election bid. And thankfully he won it, and he had a highly successful presidency. So, you know, we've got to be supporting that nominee.
Well, let me ask you, why did we do so poorly in 2022 here in Colorado, do you believe?
Well, I think on the surface, there was a backlash against the Dobbs decision, which I am in print. You know, I'm strongly pro-life, and I think the Dobbs decision was one of the greatest successes for our cause in decades. But I do think that in Colorado specifically, there was a backlash against pro-life candidates that was backed up by polling that we conducted, showing that abortion was the number two issue in District 7 and a major issue statewide. And we've got to acknowledge that reality. We do have an image problem that we need to work on. You know, Trump's unfavorable rating in District 7 is 67% unfavorable. That's a reality that we have to account for. And I don't think a lot of Republicans want to acknowledge that has affected our image, and that it's something we need to address going forward.
Well, how do you address it? I mean, you certainly had a senatorial candidate who did not like Trump.
Who said it would work against him.
Work against him. And he was pro-abortion, and he did terrible. So, I mean, if our weakness is Trump and abortion, then candidates who were anti-Trump and pro-abortion should have done well. Instead, he did terrible.
I wish it was that simple. One, we got outspent in every major race. So the media painted even Joe O'Dea as a MAGA candidate, as an election denier, just like they painted me. And so they were effective in messaging to the constituents with a lot more money than we had. I got outspent 10 to 1. And so it's very hard to overcome those narratives and create an appeal that gets enough independents in our camp. We can't ignore that demographic.
Let me ask you about this, moving to the local, the Colorado race. I know that certainly on our part, we had, we're for Christy Burton Brown, who portrayed herself as grassroots, and then she became chair, and I think was particularly not grassroots.
And notwithstanding almost 100% vote to be involved in the
closing the primaries,
which I raised all the money for, and she gave the excuse that, well, they had to get an opinion from the FEC before they opened the count. She didn't have to do anything. All she had to do was sign on to an amicus brief, and we would have gotten one over our biggest hurdle. But, of course, she didn't do it.
Because of the donors. And so that's what I wanted to ask about the money. Are you talking to Phil Antoots and his people? I mean, because that's my concern, right? That the donors, and there's only a couple of them in Colorado that have the money. And so we saw a reliable, we thought, grassroots candidate, I think, cave in probably for the money. Now, maybe her was.
Well, it happened before Steve House, who was Adams County chair, and he ran all his grassroots. And the minute he got in, he kind of went into an affair and went.
Don't do that. That's
last time Susan Beckman was going to win, and Ken Buck came in and they rigged the proxies. He didn't, but his lieutenant certainly did.
So how do we? Because it is a dilemma, right? You need money to operate, but yet the people who control the money are not sort of the grassroots, clearly. I mean, your former campaign consultant, Patrick Davis, wants to have a whole pay-to-play kind of scheme going on. How do you address that?
Can I address these one by one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with Patrick Davis, who managed my campaign for Congress, is a good friend of mine. And, if in the federal issues, we agree on probably 98%. He ran Trump's campaign here in 2016. He's a Trump appointee, and he's a Christian and very strong pro-life conservative. And we agree on most issues. The way for the party forward, however, we agree to disagree on many different things.
Okay.
Look at my history. I am my own man. I make my own decisions. I made my own decisions running for Congress. I'm going to make my own decisions as chairman. And I've articulated my positions on the caucus, on the closed primary, which he outright disagrees with.
Yeah.
But these aren't ideologies. The reason I published an argument for closing the primary was so it would stand on its own merit. So it would I could convince others to see why we need to do this. And that's how I'll operate as chairman. Good leaders surround themselves with not yes men, but people who openly disagree with them so that they can have alternative perspectives.
What about the money?
The money, I've never met Phil Anschutz. He contributed.
You're never going to meet Phil Anschutz. No, I've met Phil Anschutz. I know Phil Anschutz. And you're never going to talk to Phil Anschutz. For the rest of your life, you're never going to meet him. But Phil Anschutz has lots of people below him he sends out to talk to people.
So, the donors, I was one of the few grassroots candidates to have an extensive ground game. In fact, we turned out the highest percentage of Republicans percentage wise of any congressional district. I had a couple hundred volunteers activated, knocking thousands of doors, over 40,000 doors, 150,000 phone calls, tons of texts, a significant grassroots effort. And a lot of these donors did not support me in the primary. They supported my opponent, Tim Ryker. But they got behind me, and I was able to unify the grassroots and what would, the so-called establishment to run a highly effective congressional campaign, raising $1.4 million, which isn't easy. In the beginning, nobody would take my call. And I worked tirelessly, making phone calls 8 to 10 hours a day, cold calling people like Anschutz, like Coors, to raise that money. But never once did any of those donors dictate, how my campaign messaging or how I conducted my campaign. And I've talked to Christy. I know there's a lot of ire towards Christy, and she's seen in a whole different light by a lot of people. She said not once did any of those donors tell her how to run, how to act as chairwoman. So we've got to find a way, however, to create a plan that has broad-based appeal, because we are divided in a way that means we cannot win elections. We can't function a statewide party without a lot of money. And that's going to be a tremendous challenge for the next chairperson. When donors are saying, is there any return on an investment in Colorado? Is it even worth investing right now? I think a lot of them are saying, no, it's not worth it. And some candidates, they will outright not support if they win this race.
Yeah.
However, your point about maintaining integrity and not being beholden to that donor class is well taken and is a concern of mine. I think we need to build out a small donor network that is consistent, but most Republicans don't even contribute. So we've become
why should they people like Christy Burton Brown burn up their money for nothing? I mean, her commitment to Colorado was a disaster. I was on the executive committee of the state party, so I was down at the headquarters, and I would say, look, you can't win without ballot harvesting, because the one person they ought to hire is somebody's done ballot harvesting. I've done a ton of ballot harvesting municipal races. And I can tell you, if your side ballot harvests and the other side doesn't, you win. You will win every time. In Adams County, we won all the races in 2014. And by 2018, we lost all the races. In 2018, we were ahead in all the races until all the ballot harvesting were dumped. And then we lost everything. The greatest thing that the Democrats have done is convince Coloradoans that it's really blue. It isn't. But if you don't ballot harvest, you don't win. And I've been preaching this message for 6 years. Christy laughed in my face. She thought that was funny. She thought that was hilarious. She thought ballot harvesting for Republicans was a joke.
Well, he said he's for it.
Well, I know. But I mean, Christy Burton Brown was the worst chair I've ever seen. And I supported her first chair. I mean, she was just an atrocious loser. On every era, and she was dishonest, but that's just me, and everybody has a different opinion. But
but
you have to have two things. You have to, one, work to get rid of ballot harvesting. You have to try to put it up on the ballot system. Do whatever you can to get rid of it. But until you get rid of it, if you don't run as hard as you can with ballot harvesting, you're going to lose. In CD8, we would have won if we ballot harvested.
It's the number one item on my plan on my website is building out the organization of ballot harvest. And that's not a small endeavor.
It is a huge endeavor. It's incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult.
And I completely agree, Chuck. It's got to be done.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about this, because I think you have expressed sort of frustration as everyone keeps calling you the establishment candidate. You're like, I'm not the establishment candidate. All my ideas are the grassroots ideas. And I get that. On the other hand, though, and I'm just going to ask you flat out, and some of the people who clearly are establishment, like the Eli Bremmer, who tried to overthrow Vicky Tompkins down there in El Paso County, Scott Gessler. Now, I have heard that those people are reaching out and campaigning for you for the state GOP chair. And so how do you have people who've tried to destroy the grassroots on one level and who are clearly establishment? I mean, is that true, number one? And secondly, what's your answer to that?
Well, first of all, Scott Gessler is my attorney. He's also Tina Peters' attorney and Dave Williams' attorney. So he's remaining neutral.
That's true.
But I think Scott's been a significant advocate for Tina Peters in her legal proceedings. And so I would say that there's more than meets the eye to Scott Gessler, but
that's fair.
He's not actively campaigning for me because that would be a conflict of interest. Eli Bremmer is a fellow Service Academy graduate who has been a supporter of mine. He did endorse me in my congressional race. But I don't know that he's actively campaigning for me or doing anything for me publicly. I think he just, we have that shared commonality as Service Academy graduates and veterans. And I think what distinguishes me, Julie, from a lot of candidates is I can go into any room and work with anybody. And I really try to listen first. And I can appreciate different perspectives. You know, and there's a lot of misinformation. In fact, in this race, people are actively lying about me, like baseless lies that are totally provable. And there's a lot of distortion of the truth, and this is not helping the Republican cause. And we have to stop eating our own and propose ideas that stand on our own merits and not stand for ideological reasons, but because they are the best way to serve our values and to defend against this wholesale destruction of Colorado in this country. I'm honoring the oath I took to defend the U.S. Constitution. This is why I'm in this nasty arena, you know, getting mischaracterized, and I feel like I'm pretty misunderstood about everywhere.
Well, and it is kind of funny because, I mean, the party is split. Funny isn't the right word, but I have heard you express frustration. I mean, you don't want to say, no, I'm not that. But on the other hand, it's like, no, it's not. I mean, you know.
I heard another candidate said, I need to go back to my shrink because I'm fighting for the worst job in Colorado.
Well, and I really am doing this with the sincerest of intentions. I never aspired to be the chairman. When I was asked after my congressional race to consider this, I said no. I told the media no. And I prayed. I fasted for 7 days, no food. And I prayed and meditated before making this decision and was inspired.
Maybe you should have fasted for 8 days. And then come to another.
I made it 7.5.
Wow, that's impressive there anyway. Well, okay. So, I mean, that was going to be another question is, you know, I know – two questions. One is, okay, so as a candidate in CD7, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you had expressed frustration that you weren't getting a ton of help from the state. And if you become chair, I mean, and I've heard plenty of other candidates say similar kinds of things,
well, there's
right?
There's no money.
Well, I know there's no money, but I mean, even just other kinds of help too. So you saw firsthand as a candidate, you know, the main job is to get candidates elected. So you have firsthand experience about what the state can and can't do. What would you do?
Well, I do think that candidates felt largely unsupported. I think that is so important because it's very hard to run for office, as I think both of you know. It takes it out of you, and you're putting yourself in the arena. And so I think there needs to be a much stronger support system for candidates so they understand the process, that they know where to go. I mean, we need to help them connect with donors. We need to help them be successful. There needs to be a rigorous training program. And I'm well suited to that. I just went through every part of the process from the assembly to a tough primary and a general election that had national prominence. And I my endorsements are significant. And people say I'm establishment because I'm endorsed by, you know, Mike Pompeo and Rick Perry and Kevin McCarthy. Well, to achieve those endorsements and to gain that level of credibility is really important in winning a federal race and also raising the money. Can't do it without money. So the accusations that I've taken money from the devil because I accepted contributions from some of the big donors in the state, well, it's the ammunition to get your message out. And I was still outmatched, like I said, 10 to 1. So I think a lot of Republicans don't really understand what it takes to mount a successful federal level candidacy. It's like running a medium-sized business. It's significant. So
well, Julie knows she was behind back in her Democrat days.
Yeah, actually was the media person for Dave Williams who was running, Dave Thomas. And I can't tell you, I quit finding, it was such a cesspool, you know? I mean, I was as a former, I was like, you're kidding me. Well, let me ask you.
Well, and she also knew what you know, which is you spend your entire day on the phone trying to raise money. That's all you do.
I mean, it is soul sucking.
Yeah, that's it. The poor candidate wasn't even allowed out. It was like a little closet room back then. It was just like a little princess phone, push button phone, right? He didn't even get to go anywhere. He just sat in there with the finance director going through the list. And I just thought, that doesn't seem fun. But anyway, we're almost out of time. So same thing. I'm going to ask you the same final two questions we've asked all the other candidates.
Well, I may have some other questions.
Oh, do you want to ask him then? Because I was just going to let him have the last word and give us how to get information.
Well, you know the monetary problems. And I've always said the Republicans ought to go out to the Baccarat Room in Las Vegas and say, you know, party for sale, party for sale. Anybody like to buy the Republican Party? Because We have very, very little money. And the only hope we really have is if we can get the trust back of the average Republican who will send their $50 a month or $10 a month to the party, because there are not enough billionaires, and the billionaires are here like Paul Singer. And we have to ballot harvest, and we have to get the trust of the people back, I think, because I know there's not much trust in the Republican Party among Republicans. You're kind of struggling there.
The trust within and without is broken.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Well, final thing you want to say, and then also if people want to get more information, if they want to help or volunteer,
make phone calls for you,
where can they go?
Well, I mean, I get a good sense from watching the chat what a lot of your listeners think of me, and a lot of it is
based but don't listen to them; they're always negative.
There are people. Go respond.
But I want to encourage people that we've got to focus on the real enemy. And until we do that, until we can come together on some commonalities and some core principles and focus on beating Democrats, we will have no relevance in this state. And so I'm putting myself forth with extensive leadership experience, and a strong commitment to our conservative values and the US Constitution, wanting to take on the Democrats, which are destroying opportunity, destroying our economy, destroying our freedom. The list is long, and that's where we need to focus our attention. Until we can do that, we're not going to earn trust, because we don't look united. We look disunited. The media eats it up, and I would say this is divide and conquer, and the Democrats love it how we're killing each other.
Okay. Well, then where can people, if people who are listening,
the one that are not commenting.
My website is the same as it was for Congress. It's oddlandforcolorado.com, oddlandforcolorado.com. My plan is front and center on that website.
Right. I have to say, Eric grows on you. He's grown on me. So
yes.
Thanks very much, Eric. I really appreciate you coming on.
You make it fun. And I love your laugh, Chuck. So.
All right. Thanks, Eric. See you. Have a good weekend. All right.
You too.
All right, Eric Ogden there. And a reminder to folks, we will have Aaron Wood on. I think we'll get Casper on again next week. We've had everybody on. We had Kevin Lundberg, Tina Peters, Dave Williams. Now Eric Ogland. So if there's any out there running that we don't know about, feel free to contact us.
I know.
All right. So it's time. Actually, we'll have Robert Spencer join in, because I want to talk about Ukraine. It is going to be interesting. As you said yesterday, you've endorsed Dave Williams, mm-hmm. And I like Dave Williams too. But there are good candidates. There are good candidates out there.
I will say that,
Tina Peters.
Just like the opposite of Dick Wadhams, who's also been on this program. I think this is the best field of Republicans I've ever had.
Right.
I'd be happy with lots of the candidates winning. I think it's the best field that the Republicans had to choose.
Right. I agree.
I'm thrilled to endorse Dave, but that doesn't mean that all the other ones. Yeah. They're haven't been great too, and Eric has kind of grown on me, I'll tell you the truth, and he's done well. He's a good guy. So it's going to be a wild time on March 11th.
If you look, because I get the emails, his plan is spot on, right? But it's the same plan. Dave Williams has that plan. Tina Peters has that plan. Kevin Lundberg has that plan. Casper has that plan. I think it's going to be an interesting, my guess is, so the way it works, guys, is on March 11th, there are roughly 490 Central Committee members, and they all vote. And my guess, and if they don't,
I think they're 424 votes, because a lot of the vice chairs split up their votes.
But roughly 400 some. Plus, you have to get 51%. And that I think hardly ever happens. So I suspect.
No, it does happen. It happened with Ryan Collin, happens with other ones.
But sometimes it doesn't happen.
Sometimes it didn't have to happen last time.
Right. And so I think there will be then two rounds. And so it'll be a very interesting convention to see, because somebody's going to have to drop out. And we'll have to see where all of that goes. It'll be interesting to see March 11th if everybody stays in too. Another thing, because I will agree with Eric, based on what Eric is saying, his position clearly is not establishment, right?
Well, that's why Dick Wadham hates him.
And right, and as you said, the Dick Wadhams.
Oh, just kidding. Dick Wadham to hate him was the best thing Eric and the other candidates got. I mean, if he endorsed any of them, he said I like one of them, that was
the kiss of death.
That'd be over.
That would be
over.
The kiss of death. But unknown is there an establishment person that's going to jump in? Right. I mean, so
well, there's rumors that Heidi Gonal is, and apparently there was some super secret meeting with KBB and Deborah Flora and some others on Monday, I think. But and I haven't heard.
Which is, again,
we haven't heard from our spies on what happened at the meeting.
Just out some of the things too. And the comments, guys. Eric was reading the comments. I could see that. So. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to read. I think you all are enough already of the unity talk. But we're just about speaking of unity. I'm stalling now, waiting for Robert to come on. Yeah, Spencer.
No more of that stupid unity garbage.
We've got Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch here with us to help us sort out everything going on.
World War III.
When is
World War III officially going to start? And which... Which American cities will be
nuked
and which ones will be saved?
Note, happy Friday. Well, hey, you got to unmute yourself.
There we go.
I got it. Got it.
It's just astonishing that we even are talking about this and it's a serious thing.
Yeah.
But of course, we know that this is something that the Biden administration wants. Anybody would be stupid to think that they don't want a war.
Right.
Why do they want a war? They want a war for several reasons. One is Biden's presidency has been a disaster. If a war, then suddenly, like 9/11, everybody rallies around the flag and stops criticizing the president, and he's likely reelected if he runs in 24. That's one. Two, gets the economy going. Three, getting the economy going by making munitions and weapons and all that. And that feeds the military industrial complex, which has been starving since the end of the war in Afghanistan. Also, and this is the ugliest aspect of all these ugly things, these people believe there are too many people in the world.
Yes.
They really do think that. They think we're ruining the climate and going to destroy the planet by all our cars and everything. And so they really believe this, and they want to reduce the world's population significantly. What better way to do that than by a nuclear war? And so it seems inconceivable that anybody would actually want one, but that just happens in this case to coincide with the insane worldview of the people in power.
Well, and Robert, you know, it does a bunch. I agree with everything you just said there. I mean, number one, if we're at war, not only, you know, does it stop the criticism, it becomes, you know, I mean, it's a crime then if we're going to criticize a president during wartime, right? So the FBI can go to town. I think also, you know, in wartime, if we're supposed to suffer, right? Like we did in world. I mean,
you accept suffering as a natural consequence.
So of course we don't have eggs. Of course we can't afford gasoline. Of course.
Go to rationing.
We have to ration utilities and things like that, which all also pushes their globally. I mean, the like you said, the war, just like COVID sort of jump started a lot of that stuff. A war would fast forward all of these insidious, horrible things that they also want to accomplish, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. That's an excellent point and very important because it covers for them and at the same time takes the wind out of the sails of everybody who's saying, what is this, $8 eggs and all this business?
Right.
Well, of course, yeah, it's a war. There's a war on, buddy. But we should remember that going back to World War I, the Wilson administration put in very, very strong restrictions on the freedom of speech.
Yeah,
right?
Espionage Act of 1918.
There were people who went to prison for opposing the war.
This administration is
much more authoritarian than any administration we've ever had before. They hate the speech. They want to destroy it. What better way than under the cover of a world war?
So what is the motive of people like Mitch McConnell, who loves the war more than anybody else?
Well, the people talk about the Uniparty these days, and I think it's true that Mitch is not really in the opposition. Mitch is all part of the same club.
Yes.
And So of course he's for it. He's for whatever they want because he probably benefits from the same things that the Democrat politicians benefit from. So, you know, the Ukraine thing has never been explained and probably never will be. That Sam Bankman-Fried, the FTX guy, it went like this, but then it dropped out of sight. Yeah. The United States gives money to Ukraine. Ukraine gives money to FTX. FTX gives money to Democrat politicians.
Right, right.
We saw that reported, and then poof, it was gone.
Right.
Well, I feel a little bit like Lincoln did as a member of the Whig Party in 1848, where she's, this war is insane. I mean, we're invading them based on a pretext, really, to create more slave states, to equal out against the incoming non-slave states. But, you know, that caused the end of the Whig Party, just like opposing the War of 1812 killed the Federalist Party. It's amazing. If you oppose a popular war, and I'm not sure this is a popular war, but if you oppose,
it doesn't matter.
You have to win the war too. It helps to win it in a short period of time. But it just, it seems so evil. You know, this thing about unprovoked attack, when the U.S. did everything to provoke the attack on the Ukraine, to have NATO, you know, saying, oh, we don't attack Russia, of course. Georgia's not Russia. Kazakhstan's not Russia. I mean, we'll make everything, including Mongolia, a NATO country.
NATO, they agreed in the 90s not to expand into the former Soviet republics and the satellite states. Now, I'm not saying that that should have been the case. Maybe they should never have made the agreement. But once they made the agreement, then they're handing Putin rhetorical ammunition because he can very easily say, look, it's the West that's been encroaching upon what they agreed was our sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. And that's the aggression that we're responding to.
What about this? I mean, Chuck, you made an important point. And I think, you know, that's like, it's good to win the war. If you're going to get into one, you want to win one.
Winning the wars is not a good way.
I'm asking about that, though. But I mean, I think the United States, we have this inherent thing. Well, if we go in, we'll win. But I mean, to me.
Yeah, we should prove that in Afghanistan.
It's very alarming to me, this China-Russia coalition that's growing. And so you've got like China, Russia, Iran, India, North Korea, all of these places.
South Africa.
Maybe nuclear capabilities, right? So what do we got? We got Canada, we got France, we got what? England, you know.
Well,
maybe,
I think there were 132 countries voting for this UN resolution, which was anti. But there were 32, and now 34 countries voted against it. So we don't seem to be gaining. If you look at the polls. Approval of this unlimited aid to Ukraine seems to be dropping.
The question, though, is how dangerous, how dangerous is this? I mean, it seems to me China and Russia, I mean, for them to be uniting against the United States, now you throw in North Korea and Iran, all of these countries hate the United States. And we're just, I think the assumption that, we would win easily and like no Americans would be killed. I mean, how dangerous is this growing alliance on the other side, do you think?
Dangerous, and there's no indication that we would necessarily win. I hope we would if it came to that, but we have to remember we haven't actually won a war since 1945, and nobody who was in charge then is still alive now. Every last war that the United States has been in ever since has been a stalemate with an agreement to divvy up the land in question or an ignominious defeat.
What about the invasion of Grenada?
We're so diverse, though. We're diverse, Robert.
I don't think it's Grenada. It's like this. but the war against Russia, war against China, plus Iran, plus North Korea, plus whoever else. And what do we have on our side? We have this woke military that's more concerned with implementing critical race theory and getting everybody vaccinated than they are in actually learning how to win wars. So it's even worse. Not only do we have nobody in charge who's ever won a war? Not only have we not even tried to win a war since before any of the people who are in charge were born, but they don't even concentrate on learning how to win wars. Right. They concentrate on implementing the left's radical social agenda in the military. And the Chinese aren't playing any games like that. They don't spend any time putting their troops through critical race theory sessions and making
They just came on with a whole proposal to, you know, to kind of go against girlish men.
Right.
And, you know, we attack, you know, we promote girlish men. Well, the girlish men are perfect.
Bring a girl. We're saying we want more girlish men in the military.
Yes, right. Yes.
Men in the military, and you decide you're a woman, then they'll pay for your operation and they'll take care of you, and everybody has to tiptoe around you and call you she and her. And the Chinese are saying, we don't want any girl. We want real men in the military. Who's going to win?
Let's get this, because I think we all have, at least I do, this concept, like, you know, the mutual assured destruction, right? So everybody's going to rattle their nuclear sabers and no one's going to ever actually do anything. But again, I look at Russia up against the wall, China, who could care less about the United States, Iran, which just wants to destroy us anyway, North Korea, which wants to destroy us anyway. I mean, you look at these countries who have nuclear capabilities, who hate us. I mean, I think that's a stupid assumption that people have. And so do you think the Biden administration, are they being stupid, or do they not care if somebody actually shoots nuclear missiles at the United States or nuclear weapons?
Yeah, it would reduce the population and it would mobilize the Americans behind the government. No downside as far as the Biden administration is concerned. They don't care if millions of people are killed because it would fit their green agenda.
Right.
You'll be glad to know the FBI today, Robert, I don't know if you saw this, came out with a statement. Robert Ray issued a statement saying the FBI stands with Ukraine. They've been working for years with Ukrainian partners to battle Russian aggression in Ukraine.
In our schools.
Yeah, in our schools. I mean, so you've got
an abortion clinic.
You had that. We've got MSNBC, CNN are all doing all of this. The Justice Department is standing with Ukraine. This is my thing. If you knew nothing about Ukraine, the fact that all the usual suspects who've lied to us for years about everything are coming out in favor of it, we should be against it.
Yeah, that makes me very suspicious. And I see people that I trust and respect, and they're completely on board and say, oh, we've got to beat Putin and it's very important. And I'm sorry, I just can't see it. It seems to me the money laundering aspect has not been addressed, and the corrupt connections with the Democrats have not been addressed. The fact that all these people have connections to Ukraine, that Trump was impeached over a call to Ukraine.
Right.
Yeah. The Information Governance Board chief studied in Ukraine. I could go on and on. There's so many instances of these people that are very corrupt or very dangerous or both, and they're tied up with Ukraine somehow. And I'm just, and I see that Zelensky's walking around, you know, with what was it, Vanity Fair?
Yeah.
Well, they finished their Sand Britain photo shoot, and so then they'd go with Zelensky.
Biden shows up there, and the air raid sirens go off. I mean,
nobody's worried about it. I mean, it's the air raid sirens. That's maybe all go out. No, let's go out.
If it were real, they wouldn't have had him there.
Yeah.
Right.
It were real part two, then when the sirens went off, then they would have ducked for cover and gotten out of the way. But they're just strolling along like they're in the middle of the park on a summer day, and the air raid sirens are going off. It's obvious theater.
Right.
And people have lied to us and fooled us for so many years about so many things. They're not doing it now?
Right. Come on.
We watched not too long ago Wag the Dog, you know, which is supposed to be a satire and everything else, except it doesn't come up as a satire anymore. It comes off as a documentary.
Yeah, you could find that with Up, where all the elite people, when the nuclear weapons come, they the asteroid hits, they all take a, you know, plane to safety, and the rest of us.
Well, luckily they get eaten alive.
Krausen did a great thing last night where he talked about, so we've sent over $100 billion to Ukraine.
120.
And just this year alone. And he kind of walks through all the things we could do with that. But you'll be glad to know Samantha Powers assures us we don't need to look into it because there's no corruption going on there.
No hint.
Samantha Powers, who's in Hungary doing suspicious things, says we're just fine there.
Yeah, I saw that. And I thought, I would like to see the results of her audit.
Well, you know, it's going to things like their pensions. Well, my pension.
BlackRock, which invested, which then gives money
to Larry Fink. And,
well, where do we?
Let me ask you this: How's the war going? Because you certainly can't listen to the Western media and have any idea.
Well, the brave Ukrainians, Chuck.
The brave Ukrainians are winning at all costs and so forth. And my feeling is I have no idea because I don't trust them one bit. I can go to South Front, which is really a Russian outlet, but you know, they're on the other side. So where do you get any information on what's actually happening in the war?
I don't know the answer to that. I haven't been able to find trustworthy information. I did hear something very interesting recently, though, from a gentleman I know who lived in Russia for many years. And he told me, he keeps up with the events there, that Putin is not actually committing the Russian army to Ukraine. Right. He doesn't want to have a lot of Ukrainian casualties because he considers Ukraine a breakaway Russian province and their brothers. And he doesn't want to have the Ukrainians have this lasting hatred and resentment based on the war and the carnage of the war. So he's trying to fight the war with one hand tied behind his back. He's not committing the cream of the Russian army and he's avoiding mass casualties. Now, that's very different from what we hear in the West. Right, I don't know how true it is, but it makes sense. And it also suggests that it could get a lot uglier in as it goes on and on and on. And he realizes that if he's going to win this, then he has to go in it more deeply. But then you have the problem of he doesn't really want a world war on his side. Right. And the United States keeps pushing for it. But eventually he might have to answer that or else he'll lose face and might lose his position. So it's a very dangerous game the Americans are playing.
How does China figure? Because I think China was talking with Zelensky again today. I mean, how does China figure?
China's so happy.
Yeah,
they're the happiest people in the world. They're just giggling over themselves.
Yeah, they would love it if China, if Russia and the United States got into a war.
Yes.
Stayed out of it. They would love that because then they would be the beneficiaries. They'd be the lone superpower after the war. On the other hand, if they can play both sides against each other, then they will. I believe that Xi recently met with Putin, didn't he? And they were
right.
One of his guys.
We
did, and who is his domestic or international defense secretary, and Xi is coming over sometime in the spring.
Yeah,
I'm going
to go to Moscow in the winter.
Yeah, they don't go in the winter.
Easily ally with them. After all, there's a history there. And that would be extraordinary. That would be catastrophic for the United States.
Well, the other thing that's depressing about this is, you know, the Biden government keeps saying, I mean, Tucker Carlson again played a montage that we're going to be there as long as it takes, as long as it takes. Now, we're not sure what it is we're trying to accomplish there. I believe there are those things you mentioned at the beginning. But it seems to me that even if Putin were to surrender and say, I give you everything, I give up everything, they're going to still go to war because they still need to accomplish like all the money laundering things. They need to get rid of the population. I mean, they need to be able to silence the people. A peace settlement does not accomplish any of those goals. I mean, so I think the American government under Biden and the Uniparty are not interested in any kind of peace, are they?
No, they're not. And there have been reports about them turning down peace offers based on various adjustments of the border. I mean, look, those provinces in the east are Russian population anyway. So let the Russians have them. And people say, oh, this is this terrible thing. And they seized Crimea. Crimea is Russian population as well. Nikita Khrushchev gave it to Ukraine in the 50s because he was atoning for Stalin's Ukrainian famine.
Well, he'd been based in Ukraine.
Well, what about, I mean, the other concern I have is once Putin realizes, which probably already has, is that, you know, the United States is not going to back down because we want this war. To me, if I'm Putin, I would think, well, okay, then I'm just going to do a preemptive strike fast and end this. You know, I mean, you put him in a corner and he's going to have to react. And that reaction, I think, should be very alarming to Americans.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt he could be pushed into a position. That's what I was saying a minute ago, that he could be pushed into a position where he has to respond. And then we've got the world war that they want. And, you know, this kind of thing has happened before. People say, and there's a lot of truth to it, you know, Franklin Roosevelt knew that the Japanese were going to attack, but he didn't do anything because he wanted that war.
Right. And
the problem with American presidents that want wars, they might well get it.
It's a little tough on the rest of us.
You talked a second ago about a lot of people you respect are all in on the Ukraine war. And there are a lot of people that I know that are all in the Ukraine war. And I don't get it. Is it just xenophobia? Is it just
brainwash?
Or the media? Or what is it?
It's a funny thing about the left in the first place, that all through the Cold War, when the Soviet Union was a real threat, they mocked and ridiculed conservatives for being worried about that threat.
Yeah.
And I remember that they spoke about it all as just about hating Russians, as if somebody would hate. I mean, who would care enough? But anyway, I remember Ronald Reagan when he was president, and he went to a concert of, I think it was Rachmaninoff. And I remember reading in the paper how strange it was that he had gone to see a Russian composer, because obviously he hates Russians. Mm-hmm. And that's how they talked then. But now Cold War's over and Russia is substantially weaker, and suddenly it's this huge threat for the left. They've just made it into this bogeyman. Now, reason people, on the other hand, they do say, look, if he takes Ukraine, he's going to try to reconstitute the Soviet Union. So he'll take the Baltic states, and then he'll threaten Poland and East Germany and Czech Republic and Slovakia. And we're back in
the domino theory.
Right. It is possible, but Russia is indeed much weaker than it was in the days of the Soviet Union. They're having enough trouble with Ukraine. They, as I said, they haven't committed their full army yet, but he's not in a position he's compared to Hitler a lot. And Hitler rolled through Poland and then invaded everywhere else and was master of Europe within a couple of years. He couldn't hold it, but he had the military to do that. I'm not sure that Russia does have the military to go on after Ukraine.
Russia and China, maybe.
All right. Hey, Robert. Well, on that happy note,
we're rolling through Europe now.
Thank
you so much. We appreciate you being on, and it's always enlightening. Always enlightening.
Folks, thank you.
All right, thank you, care. Robert Spencer. There, hey, that's going to wrap it up for us. It's Party Friday. Chuck has to go to the ballet, the Glendale Ballet.
Watch rugby.
Leo, yeah, to watch rugby. Rev and I will stay home and eat McDonald's or something.
which is a great treat.
It is a great treat for Rev. Thank you to Eric Oglin. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate Eric coming on.
Yeah, thank you to all the great guys on Zoom. We appreciate all of you, the guys at BBS. Remember, you can catch all our shows at chuckandjulie.com. We have Aaron Wood on for Monday, and we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.